Welcome to the self-aware geek chic podcast that's run by the alt-right Yimbies.
Darlings. The alt-right darlings.
Alt-right darlings.
Darlings of the real estate industry.
True. But definitely don't forget alt-right, which they had to correct. In any case, infill. You know what, though?
We're not bitter about the article.
We're not bitter. We're totally not bitter. Actually, I'm not bitter at all. But I am really glad that someone finally noticed that infill is a pun. Because I have to explain this pun all the time. No one gets it, okay? Like, it's very funny if you're a land use nerd. Like,
that may have been the only perceptive clause in that entire article.
The only thing they, like, took from you and wrote into the article.
Yes, sure. They got it. Infill. We fill you in, and it's about infill development. Everybody laugh now.
Okay? Okay, well. You are as clever as you are lovely.
Hey.
Well, that was a compliment. God damn it. That didn't work at all.
And then I feel like you do that. Yeah. We'll do the intro there.
Well, I don't know. Whatever. So our first topic of the day is actually not going to be that wretched Truthout article. It's going to be about something that Sam feels is wretched. The Frontline news show about the Affordable Housing LIHTC program. That stands for?
Low Income Housing Tax Credit.
Which I don't think was so wretched, but we're going to talk more about that. Our second topic is going to be the Truthout scandal and all the other articles that sort of spilled out from that. And then we're going to get a little update from Sacramento and some other random updates. So, Sam, start us off with why we should hate Frontline News.
So, I mean, don't hate the news. It's the news. It's, they try hard. So, Frontline did a expose about the low-income housing tax credit. But instead, they just chose a couple actors that abused the whatever out of it in Texas and Florida. Low-income housing tax credit is this thing that allows market-rate investors to invest in affordable housing. They give money in exchange of tax credits. We affordable housing developers take that money and we add it to the pile when we build new affordable housing projects, and then also when we refinance or rehab an old project.
Now Sam, just to clarify here, my understanding is that the LIHTC program is, in fact, the largest federal program for funding affordable housing, and it was part of a deal in the early 80s from the Reagan administration, in part to replace what used to just be lots of federal money through HUD for public housing projects.
Without a doubt, that's definitely what it is. In the old days, and I say old because I'm young and beautiful, but we used to just get one loan from HUD, and we can go buy a building or a site, build the whole thing, no big deal. And then when Reagan decided to kill all subsidies for everyone, it was a deal that he made. So essentially, you ask for a tax credit, the nonprofit, and then you sell that tax credit in exchange for money.
And I will say the Frontline does a good job of explaining how this works. And how it interacts with the banking system, and why it's one of these Reagan era private public partnerships that then fund these private nonprofits that are building housing. And I would also say that I don't think you guys should be so mad about this, because while it is a little bit a story of an affordable housing developer who went astray, it's also a story of NIMBYism driving them to extreme measures.
Truly. I mean, both instances that were about graph started with them wanting to do a just straight up project, get it pushed through, and the only way, quote unquote, to do it was
Sam, could you explain a little bit, like, exactly what happened to our listeners that maybe did not watch the video?
Oh, wait. Not everyone watched the video.
Yeah, there may be at least one of us in this room that couldn't be bothered to
sit down and watch the video. You underestimate our listeners, my friend.
If it were an article, I could read it quickly, but
so essentially, when you do a low-income housing tax credit deal, there is a bunch of different people in the deal. There's lenders, there's the government, there's the investor in low-income tax credits. So the nonprofit developer, like Mission Housing, is at the center of everything. And one of the things that's imperative is the construction contract. It's, I need all this money from you people so that I can build this thing. And the construction contract is what determines that. So basically what they did was ask for more money than it actually cost. And then they took a little bit off the top, and the construction company, and in one of the cases, I think one of the politicians, were the ones that were telling the nonprofit developer to do that. And if you do this, we'll split the profit up, we'll split the money on top of it up, and we will get the project pushed through planning. That's basically how it started.
Yeah, okay, so I would frame this entire story entirely differently. The Frontline news piece, which we will link to in the show notes, paints a very important picture of how obnoxious municipalities are in fighting housing going into their, you know, we have a classic NIMBY incident.
For affordable housing.
Housing. But they also, I think they touch on anti-housing. I mean, they have a woman who's like the perfect NIMBY who gets up there and says, I'm not racist, but. There's nowhere that sentence goes. Yeah. I'm not racist, I'm not anti-poor people, but...
You can, like, see her face, how she knew that this was going to come off horribly. Yeah. But she still persisted.
She kept going.
Yeah.
She kept going, and I was like, no, lady, bail out now. In any case, so it paints you how difficult it is, you know, while there's this LIHTC money, it paints the picture extremely well. The first, like, 45 minutes are affordable housing developers struggling to get their housing actually entitled.
Wait, I'm sorry. This video is 45 minutes long?
It's like an hour-long piece.
Which is why I'm surprised that not everyone watched it. It's not 2 hours.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's like an hour-long.
So, wait, could you, like, make an animated, like, GIF of this?
Yeah.
With some, you know, subtitles? Then maybe I can get on board.
Yeah, just imagine an affordable housing developer banging their head up against the wall, and that's what, like,
my exact mental image is Sam banging his head up against that wall right now.
Like, you've seen me do that.
I've seen you do that, so alright, I've already seen the show.
So, the thing that made my industry and me personally so mad is that I believe they use the two instances to demonize the tax credit industry. They went into detail about how we are giving more tax credits, we're giving more tax breaks to for-profit investors, and we're building less housing than we did 10, 20 years ago with more money. And so they glossed over the fact that, like, the tax credit industry was always supposed to be supplemental. It was supposed to be like 20% or so icing on the cake because HUD was gonna have all this money, because the states were gonna have all this money. And then both of those entities decided to just have no money. And so we're using tax credits to build all of the things, and that's why we're getting less. And they just, like, decided to not talk about that part.
Yeah. Okay. And, like, just to be clear, that I just want to, like, clarify. So when you're building a 100% below market rate housing project for low income people, you're drawing from a number of different funding sources. Mm-hmm. And so, Sam, so what you're saying is that these tax credits were never meant to cover the entire cost of construction and operation.
Definitely not.
Yeah.
This is a case where I would say you see what you want to see. I understand that you guys feel like it was a very rough piece, and I get that. But I also think that, like, this, what I saw when I watched it, and I went in watching it thinking this is going to be really harsh, and I actually think they painted a really incredible picture of affordable housing developers backed into a corner and being told by municipalities the only way you're going to get your project passed is if you pay off various people in local government and neighbors and whatnot. And that is totally the case. I mean, that is something we see on the ground. Small projects, large projects, market rate projects, affordable housing projects, it's a racket. Everyone getting through that entitlement process, they're paying off permit expediters. Permit expediter should not be a job.
It's a very lucrative job.
Well, if we had by right permitting, then we wouldn't need a permit expediter.
Or if the system was fair,
yeah.
You wouldn't need a permit expediter. There should not be a thing that a person can do to expedite the permitting process if it were at all fair.
You know, so the year of community organizing that it takes before you can even break ground on affordable housing.
So Laura, I agree with that. I want to speak up in favor of graft and bribery, though.
It's perfect, because we don't have enough things that we want to have this for.
Look, I think progressives, and I mean like genuine progressives, not the sort of San Francisco style progressive in quotation marks.
Faux-gressive.
You know, shouldn't worry as much about, you know, process and good government, should worry more about outcomes. And the fact of the matter is, if a little bit of graft is able to grease the wheels and get more housing built more quickly so that more people are helped, that's fine. Now, I would much prefer...
Why does the graft exist?
Like, now, look, I would much prefer a scenario in which none of this mattered, in which it was everything was straight by right, in which we hadn't been planning for this. But, you know, I just don't get that worked up about these kinds of stories.
Well, I do, because I think that it adds to the... Now we're demonizing not just market rate affordable people, but we're demonizing subsidized affordable people, when it is clearly a case of the thing we say all the time: if you want to get developers out of politics, you have to take the politics out of development. Of course, if you set up a system where there's going to be graft and it's the only way to get through is to work the system, you're going to have people who's all they think about is working the system. And, like, this is the thing. Sam, I want you to spend less time, like, really putting effort into working the system, because the system should be fair.
Look, and it's another we're all thing in agreement
too,
though.
It's another thing, too, about how the people who are making it, like, who are making the situation where you have graft or you have to do this, they're the landed gentry homeowners.
Yes.
And we all demonize other people, or we're forced into the situation where, oh, the affordable housing developer, the tax credit investor, or this person. It's never the landed gentry homeowner who just doesn't want a new person in their neighborhood we demonize.
I completely agree with both of you. I agree that we should have a housing system that does not require graft. All that I'm saying is that we shouldn't demonize those who, you know, offer bribes. Given the type of system that we have right now. So yeah, look, we should have, you know, if your project complies with rules, it should be an over-the-counter permit. You shouldn't need any discretion. You shouldn't need to do a fucking year of community outreach to convince homeowners that they should live next to poor people.
I wouldn't want to get rid of all of it.
Yeah, I mean, well, look, there's other shit that you could be doing, like with your job.
I'm just saying, like, right. I like it.
I know, but this is the problem, right? Okay, so I'm going to try to say this in a nice way.
Are you?
So, what you end up at the end of this system, and I agree with you that we can't demonize people for paying off people when that's the only way that things get done. I don't know what the, like, moral solution to that is, except change all the laws. But
I'm working on it.
Yeah.
We're working on it.
But the point is that you end up then with people whose competitive advantage in this marketplace is working the system. And then you end up with developers who actually have weird incentives to keep the system complicated. And I'm not going to name names here, but I want you to know that I could. Who will end up doing weird things.
If we have a little bit more whiskey, we might start naming names, because we know a lot of the same names.
You end up with supposedly developers who you would think want to build a lot more housing, end up saying, like, no, let's keep this complicated, horrible bureaucratic system in place, because actually their competitive advantage is being politically connected, working the system, and getting their projects approved through manipulating all of the parties involved and knowing who the right people to pay off is. And, like, this again adds to the Laura is always fucking frustrated with developers, because they
Whoa, you're a developer shill. You're not frustrated with them. You're working for them.
You know, Laura, I just want you to be clear. We are in the room with the developer right now.
Okay. Ugh, and I give him a lot of crap, and he takes it pretty well.
Look, I think we've, you know, covered this on the show before, and you're exactly right. The most successful developers in San Francisco and in other places in California that have these convoluted entitlement processes aren't necessarily those that are the best at, you know, bringing to market high quality housing for low prices and being really good project managers. It's those who have political
connections. I think it's also the and people who have more money. It's like the people have more equity to like throw around to deal with the three to eight years.
That's exactly right.
Before you get to go build the thing.
Yeah. Well, and I'm seeing that right now in Berkeley. So, you know, Carla has a case where we filed a suit against Berkeley because they denied a zoning compliant housing project from a very small developer who wanted to build three units. He was going to live in one of the units. It's like a husband and wife team.
That would gentrify
it. Forever. Yeah, it's like, it's crazy.
Three units.
Ridiculous, yeah. And, you know, long story short, the city, you know, the zoning adjustment board approved it. The city council overturned it, denied it. Then we went to court. The city attorney's like, oh, yeah, we violated state law here. So they signed an order, basically a settlement with us, saying that, yeah, we will reevaluate this housing project in light of state law. They then just denied the project again. So now we are going to have to go back to enforce our order to file another suit against Berkeley while the developer is now totally disengaged, and he just might try to sell his project to someone else to remodel it as a luxury single-family home. The place, there's basically a dilapidated home that's not habitable right now, and he was going to tear it down to build three units. But that's how these folks win, and this is why the deep-pocketed developers can persevere, because this guy cannot afford to just sit on this property and pay taxes and not have a place to live.
And I feel like that's the thing about California and specifically the Bay Area. Like, I think we lose sight of all the sites that could be smaller, 3 to 5 or 8 or, you know, unit buildings. That it's not Lennar, it's not these giant buildings that are 150 units. Like, those are in a class of themselves. The thing that I truly believe that we are missing the most, that has led to the crisis the most, is that we can't build 5 or 6 units or 8 units or infill here, infill, no pun intended.
But this is what I... So there's all these stats about the amount of construction costs going up over the past, like, 30 years. That, you know, we've gone from construction being, like, 70% of a project to, like, 80... I don't know what the stats are. But, like, construction costs are much higher than they used to be. And that is biased because where you're losing... This is... I don't know. I'm making this up now, right? I'm doing anecdata. But I believe that the real underlying driver of a lot of that increase in construction costs is that most of the projects that we're actually doing are the massive projects that are more expensive and are not the 5-unit apartment buildings that would be built, like, on Geary Boulevard. We're just not doing those anymore.
At all.
So that is definitely part of it. It's also the case, though, that you have a lot of... you had a lot of firms that went out of business during the Great Recession, and you simply, contractors are making a killing right now. Not necessarily the developers who are hiring the different contractors.
I mean, we're having trouble getting bids on anything like 500,000. We have a few improvement or rehab projects, but we can't even get bids on them. Yeah. There's no one. They'd all rather be a sub of a sub of a sub at the Millennium Tower, basically.
Yeah. Well, and also the...
Which is sinking.
The problem is... In, if we had an, you know, in other industries, when you have a boom, like whether it's in tech or whether it's in construction, you'd have people move from other parts of the country here to take part in this great miracle. Well, they can't afford to. So in a way, like, this is like another example of how the housing shortage is preventing more housing from being built because construction workers can't move. Well,
the unions and the construction companies, when 08 happened and the world fell apart, they had a thing where they went 4 years where they should have been training leaders to train the apprentices, and then they didn't.
Yeah.
I'm going to fix all of it. I just need
a
decade. Just give it to
me. Yeah, well, we'll fix everything in 10 years.
Yeah.
And this is like, you know, let's now pivot. Speaking of how all the things we have to overcome and how we're going to fix everything, and I give it 10 years. So we had this wretched article come out this is where I struggle, right? Like, my people originally, DC, are fringy leftists, okay? Like, that's what I grew up in.
Same with me. And you should see, my father, like, just sent me all these photos because he's moving of me. I'm like, oh, this is what I look like when I was like 18, 19. Here's me in my Minor Threat t-shirt and my like cut off, like, you know.
I was a jock that was really good at baseball in Fresno, so.
Oh my God.
But side note, just to prove that everyone can get along even though they're not from the same background.
There we go.
I feel like the three of us.
Sam and I organized the dork revolution in high school to dethrone the preppy oligarchy.
And I was really good at sports.
And I won, by the way.
I like don't even know what that means. So what I was saying. So like I come from like a social justice background. I was raised in like radical peace activists. People. I went to the first integrated school in the DC area, like was trained in social justice. Like I knew Christopher Columbus was a murderer. Like that was the first version I was given.
Wait, like, so what you're saying is like you were woke before it was cool, right?
Right. Okay. Yeah. And we were also always talking about how problematic everything was.
It was like safe spaces everywhere.
Yeah. And then like safe spaces from the safe spaces. Like we were like totally navel gazing.
You're like the boomers complaining about how you were doing things before us asshole millennials were doing things.
What was the point of all of this?
I'm sorry, I don't know where you're going with this.
The point of that. Okay. All of that is to say that like I don't know how to deal with radical leftists who aren't smart and factual.
That's because you're from DC. I had the exact same experience when I moved to San Francisco as well. Because, you know, again, I got my start working with these folks, going to anti-eviction protests in the Mission. And yet, as I started getting involved with YIMBY, and, you know, I was excommunicated from that scene, they're critiquing us, I was calling my radical friends in Chicago and DC, being like, hey, have I sold out? Like, am I changing here? They're like, no, people are fucking crazy.
San Francisco, you know, people, they're indoctrinated. San Francisco has this weird legacy of older white baby boomers, you know, being, I'm making quote signs with my hands, you know, progressive and teaching a younger generation about how to be progressive, but they've put a hood over everyone's eyes, you know, because like the real reason is to keep the redlining / zoning map the way that it is, so we can just like let the West Side be a suburb. And that's, I mean, I feel like that's where it's born out of. You know, there's a lot of young people who just are trying to come up and be important or be recognized by people who have no intention of actually recognizing them.
Well, and the weirdest part is that every once in a while, one of them will be like awake enough to say, why don't you go yell at the wealthy homeowners?
Right.
And I'll be like, that's literally 80% of what I do.
And that's what I mean by it. Like, yeah, and that's like, that they ask for it means that they've never considered it. They are, you know, like they don't even look at us.
It's a willful misrepresentation because like what the fuck did I co-found Carla for?
I have no idea.
It's like Sony and I's first big, you know, action was against Lafayette, which was founded as an exclusionary bastion of privilege.
We organized all these people. Like a few weeks ago, we organized a 20, I don't know how many people, we had more than 15 people to go down to Brisbane to yell at the wealthy white homeowners. And we invited, I'll give Corey a little shout out here. He like passively aggressively invited like every faux aggressive he knew. Not a single one of them showed up.
Well, no, because you're mean to them, and you point fingers and call them names.
Anyways, all right, let's talk about the actual article, right?
I don't even want to talk about the actual article. The actual article said we're white supremacists who hate poor people. Like, what do we, like...
And only white males run the YIMBY.
Yeah, so that's the one thing I would think about.
I'd like to just say that there are no white males running the YIMBY thing, Laura and Sonia.
Well, Brian gets in adjacent.
Brian comes in and gets free office space. Let's be real.
Well, look, what the article actually said, let's create some space for me here, is that all of the leaders are...
Create safe space for white males.
I said some space. I didn't say a safe space.
Oh, it's so weird that a white male would need to get some space.
Have you seen my elbows, motherfucker? They extend like, you know, 3 feet from my body. So yeah, I need some space.
This is going to be a great podcast.
But so Aaron McElroy, the Anti-Eviction Mapping Project, said the leaders of the YIMBY movement are what disproportionately or mostly
quoted,
white males from tech. Yeah, she was quoted several times. One, there's actually not a single human in the leadership position of the YIMBY movement that meets that description. I'm not in tech, and other male leaders are not in tech. But it is the case, though, that much of our volunteer base are white male guys in tech.
Right.
Now, that's fantastic. Now, doesn't that reflect well on these, you know, mostly young white men in tech, that they're willing to take political direction from people like Sonia and Laura and in
Which
the East
hard.
Bay from Tory, right? I mean, it's...
Yeah.
What's the critique?
There are valid critiques of YIMBY. Like, I am happy, and I navel gaze myself. One of the hardest things for me is that I have one-on-ones with people of color, people who are from more disadvantaged backgrounds, who are, like, really excited about the YIMBY movement, but who, frankly, cannot get their butts to Thursday afternoon hearings, right? They're struggling. They're working. They can't necessarily get to the YIMBY happy hours because, you know, it's Wednesday and we're all just
But if you can get to the YIMBY happy
hour,
you should come.
Yes,
it's fun.
So the YIMBY hours are fun. But I'm saying that, like, it is difficult. It is inherently structurally difficult. And this is why hyperlocalism is bad.
Yeah.
Is that if you make the level of engagement required to be such a high degree in order to have your voice heard, obviously you're going to select for whiter and wealthier people.
So completely agree. And you'd be happy to know that in Paavo Munkkinen's, a friend of the YIMBYs, he's a professor at the UCLA Luskin School of Public Affairs. In his white paper that he presented at the University of California Sacramento Center over the summer, that was maybe his most controversial suggestion, that unless we are able to make participation in the land use process more reflective of the people who live in a place and or want to live in a place, then maybe we should just get rid of it. Because as it is, you go to community meetings like in the west side of San Francisco in neighborhoods that are half Asian American, and they're like 90% old white people.
Yeah.
In the end, you're beholden to a small amount of humans' opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's just not the way it should be.
So, yeah, we don't need to talk much about this, but I thought the way that you prefaced this segment was good and is a similar way that I felt some months ago, which is that, hey, I thought these were my people.
Yeah.
You know, I thought when I moved to an area and I, you know, get involved in anti-eviction direct action, and I see people who are the same sort of folks I was, you know, doing activism with, like when I was in college, right? And they want nothing to do with us.
I mean, it's literally everything. We agree with them on almost everything. It's just this segment of things.
I wouldn't even say that we really. I mean, some of them are anti-market rate housing because they've been told that market rate housing
Right, that's what I mean about, like, they've been indoctrinated.
Wait, hold on. But, like, when you say they, there's a huge difference between the leaders of these groups and the ordinary people in these groups. Because, like, I noticed, like, when I first started going to all these mission community meetings, I would have conversations with, you know, elderly Latina women that were there, and they thought that building more market rate housing made all the sense in the world. Hashtag not all elderly Latino women.
Do.
You know,
no, you're right.
like there's a real diversity of viewpoints in these communities, just like there's a diversity of viewpoint in every community.
This is what I get frustrated about. These two authors, they are young people who have been indoctrinated through a thing. And they come up and they write this piece, and like little to nothing of it is factual. And they just get away with it. And then, like, supervisors push it out. And, you know, people that they look up to push it out. And they're
supervisors
just
say, disturbing if true.
Which is also true of if a bunch of corgis came down and stabbed each other in the public.
I don't even want to describe it. We'll link to it in the
All right.
show notes.
Fair enough. But I want to say, Sam, though, you had a pretty great story about one of these authors earlier.
I did.
And
so,
you were friends with them.
One of the authors did the same to me, and I'm not trying to get all like white male and take away from young females getting shit on, because, you know, if you're getting shit on, you should get it. That's all I'm saying.
You're just saying
that. The patriarchy sucks. That's all I'm trying to say. So, 3 years ago, I had, like, just gotten my feet underneath me being executive director at Mission Housing. And one of my friends asked me to do an interview with Andrew
Zeto or whatever. Yeah.
I'm not sure if it was both of them. It was definitely one of them. And I kept saying no because I know, like, I didn't know them. And I only do interviews with reporters that I know and have a relationship with and have a rapport with. I need rapport for all the reporters out there.
I may have really fucked up then, because I had like an hour-long interview with a reporter.
You definitely fucked up, like 100%.
So there may be another Brian Hanlon, another alt-right YIMBY leader coming out
darling.
In all a right, couple darling. Weeks. Well, it's nice that I'm a so darling. Like, I'll take that.
It was about SROs. 3 years ago, there was a... For a while, people were like, why aren't all the SRO private owners? And I always say that one of my biggest frustrations is that we have to call our SROs the same name as the private SRO owners are, because we actually take care of our buildings and we have services.
Ooh,
yeah, burn. I'm laying the gauntlet down. It's Woo! Down.
All right.
Other people aren't as good as us. So I finally capitulate and I agree to do this interview. And... like, this guy, Andrew, takes all of my words out of context. It, like, nothing that came out in the article was anywhere near what I tried to say. If you read the article and you didn't know me, I would be a white capitalist market rate developer that got into a nonprofit and never talks to his tenants. That's how I would...
Okay, but to be fair, you used to play baseball.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. That's true.
I hear that you're like, you were really good at bunting. Is that right? You have
sacrifice
like
hits, my friend.
Sacrifice
I have
hits. Okay.
The Patriot League record. Division one, everybody. I'm just saying, it's not Division two or three. I mean, it's Division one.
Yeah, those fucking movies.
So like, I had forgotten about the article, literally, and when last week when the other article came out, it was like PTSD came back because when they wrote the first article, I had just started, and it was like, I thought, I had a board meeting like a few days after the article came out, and I was like, oh, I'm gonna get fired, like, this is bad. And the opposite happened, and it turns out that all my board members were baby boomers who weren't good at the internet, and they didn't even read it, because no one reads Truth Out except for all of us.
Well, let's be
this
real,
this is the lesson.
We actually don't read Truth Out.
No, but the freaking, I mean, this is where it hurts.
That's a lesson,
right?
I want to teach, though.
But like, the Bernie-crats, the San Francisco Bernie-crats, like, shared it out. And I'm like, freaking A. Like, you know, I don't know what to, like...
Well, it's because it's scary if it's true, right?
Yeah. No, but this is, like, what we were talking about, like, before. It's like, God damn it, I thought these were our people.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, we have such an uphill battle... just fighting what we, you know, the landed gentry, incumbent
homeowners.
It's the
kissing of the ring and that is getting hard on me.
We,
like, why do we have to kiss so many rings?
Well,
I have
I
a
don't.
Ring. I think
that's
people should
my
kiss
problem,
my ring.
Right? I don't kiss any rings. And then people say that I'm not respectful.
And I don't either.
Fine.
And that's why you and I had to start our own organizations. And Sam was able to be executive director of an established
exactly.
organization.
Literally.
That's the difference right here.
And then we started making a podcast.
And then everyone realized that secretly Sam never wanted to kiss any rings.
No, I hate kissing rings. I've been on a 5-year kissing ring tour, and it sucks for YIMBY land out there.
All right, well, let's, we'll put all the, like, things you should read in the show notes, but let's pivot.
Is there any Sacramento update?
Yeah, sure. So, things are going well. So, the two Housing Accountability Act bills that we have, AB 678 in the Assembly and SB 167 in the Senate, both those bills have passed all their policy committees, so they'll be heading to the floor of their respective houses for a vote soon. After that happens, they then switch houses and process. So, you know, things are going well. SB 35, Scott Wiener's bill. Oh, shit. Did it pass appropriations or has it gone there yet?
It like passed appropriations.
Okay,
yeah,
good.
But it's going to be a
you
little
know.
Bumpy.
So, yeah, things, bottom line, things are going well in Sacramento. We're going to have a much larger presence in Sacramento next year. We'll be able to announce some things hopefully soon. But yeah, yeah, keep posted.
And we're going to be, you know, definitely make sure you're signed up for our mailing list and that kind of stuff, where we send out action alerts to send emails to people. Because when those bills get close to actually hitting the floor and getting voted on, we're going to need to do a real email push. And that's for YIMBYs across the state, so that they, I mean, the whole point is that people want to hear from their constituents.
And this push will probably happen very soon after you hear this podcast.
Yeah.
And if you're not a member, you don't care. So, like, join and be a member.
Yeah.
It's cooler to be a member. That's all I'm saying.
Definitely, yes.
Like, if you want me to think you're cool.
So, actually, tonight, okay, so by the time you listen to this, the ABC 10 piece will have probably already dropped. So, we'll be, like, pushing that out on all kinds of social media. But the point is that, so ABC 10 organized this.
That's the Sacramento
ABC out of Sacramento, feed, right? Yeah. Yes. ABC 10 out of Sacramento organized a debate type thing with me, Sam, Peter Cohen, and Tommy from Housing
Rights Commission.
Rights Commission.
Committee.
Committee.
Whatever.
Yeah.
It's a C.
So it's, and it's really, so the quality's not so great visually because the, like,
well, we got passed over for the camera crew for...
Yeah.
Breaking news.
Breaking news. The camera crew got pushed away, so it's on an iPhone. It's like a little crappy. But the content is excellent, especially the part where Peter Cohen says that we're so mean, and that's why he can't help us with anything, is because we're so mean.
Literally.
And it hurts his feelings.
Because we point fingers.
Yeah.
So much finger pointing.
Really, and we all know that Peter Cohen doesn't have feelings, so this is just the most ridiculous.
And he's never been mean to anyone in this room. At all.
No, total not an asshole. Yep.
It's not like there's a company that I took over that he, like, defunded and everything.
Okay, but that's not bitter. Politics.
Not bitter, everybody.
No, to be fair, like, he was mad that, like, people are mean, like, personally mean. On the other hand, I know people that he has screamed at for, you know, 20 minutes on the phone. So, like, here's the smallest violin in the whole world for people whose fifis are hurt. This is a, like, tone policing is a thing that the YIMBY movement has been dealing with from day one, where it was, like, people who hated us and didn't want to engage with us at all said repeatedly, the only reason I won't talk to you is because somebody you're associated with was mean to me on Twitter.
If only
once.
You're nicer.
Yeah.
We could have a conversation.
If only you're nicer. And then it was, if only you show up to this rally. Okay,
if
now
only you could turn people out.
Yeah. The goalpost moving, it was intense. But I just kind of ignore it because I'm like, yeah, yeah, whatever. You're going to realize we're the new hotness, and then you're going to regret. And that's fine, because I will welcome you with open arms when you realize that you were mistaken.
I would give anything to watch you welcome Peter Cohen.
Okay.
I'd actually rather not see that transaction, but...
Well, so Sonia now is... this is like welcoming with open arms. I don't know if I would have been able to do this, but in our efforts to, there's the Keith Ellison bill,
yeah,
to redo the mortgage interest tax deduction, so which is a regressive tax.
H.R. 948 would cap the mortgage interest deduction at $500,000, where it's currently capped at $1 million. And then there would,
for
there would
vacation
be,
homes, right?
No.
That's the
David Chu
bill.
That's AB 71 in Sacramento, state level bill. H.R. 948 applies to all mortgages. And then there would also be funds, $15,000, I forget the exact figure, that would be a tax credit, like a renter's tax credit.
It's an awesome, very progressive housing bill. Strangely enough, many progressives in San Francisco are weirdly quiet about this bill. And guess what? Nancy Pelosi is actually, you know, trending towards, she hasn't officially given any indication of where she is, but she looks like she might be a no on H.R. 948.
Because the realtors dominate her?
No, it's because the single family home, I'm sorry, just the
homeowners
dominate politics here, and all mortgages are over $1 million now in San Francisco because of our terrible housing policies.
Rich homeowners donate to her.
Though, I will say, side note, I do think the realtors of California is something that, like,
totally,
the YIMBY movement is going to have to come to, we're going to have to go, like, have a adult conversation with them eventually about
with
housing
realtors,
and all these things.
Yeah. I mean, especially when it comes to Prop 13.
I mean, I just think
mortgages.
That when you say Pelosi doesn't support it, because of homeowners. I truly believe it's because the California realtors called her and was like, oh, my homeowner people hate it.
You know, that's not, I mean, in California, maybe, but one, like, nationwide, there is such a small percentage of mortgages that are between $500,000 and $1 million. It's just that in coastal California, in like the most liberal districts in the country, in New York, in Boston, in other liberal places, we have such terrible housing policies while having all the smart people. So we have high, like, robust highways job growth. You know, housing is really expensive.
Is it?
Yeah, you may have noticed. That's kind of over here.
The point is, but the point is that Nancy's actually swayable because of the demographics of San Francisco, where we're 70% renter. Like, we could move her on this issue. And only if we get people who are from a wide variety of ideological positions to all say we're in this and we're yes on 948.
And I can't believe I'm saying this, but Trump is probably presenting an even better scenario where they're all, like Nancy, they're all looking for a way to make their mark, at, you know, like in this instance.
And seem more, see, be progressive, yeah, where before they had an incentive they're to just be like
corporate Democrat.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the real opportunity with the Republicans in Congress right now is that, again, almost all of these districts where mortgages are very expensive are Democratic districts. Not all of them, but most of them. And there is nothing that Republicans love doing more than sticking it to limousine liberals. And this is a way to do it.
I mean, I like
to do
that, too.
So, I mean, that's kind of like actually what we do as well. But so, like, Diane Yentel, the head of the National Low Income Housing Coalition, said yesterday in Sacramento that she thinks that if D.C. is able to get a tax reform package through, now that's a big if, right? Because we might not even have a government in a few weeks. Who the hell knows? But if that happens, she thinks that we're going to get some kind of mortgage interest deduction reform, which just a few years ago would have been unthinkable.
The end result of that is Sonia sending an email to Calvin Welch saying...
A very polite, well-written email.
It was.
Just in case anyone...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hate saying. It. No, a very polite, very well-written email saying, hey... You hate limousine liberals. I hate limousine liberals. Let's all get together on HR. Oh,
well, Kevin Welch is a limousine liberal, but
that
go ahead.
Totally, but he
I
wants to
that was
pretend.
Elbowing. That was Welch?
That was Welch, yeah.
So he wants to pretend he's not a hypocrite. We want to help him pretend he's not a hypocrite, okay? I feel like this
he's
is like
a
all...
Yeah.
It's fine. We're all going to get together, and we're all going to reform the mortgage interest tax deduction, because if Calvin Welch wants to believe that he's on the side of renters, maybe we could just get him to say that out loud.
Realtors are the entity that pushes homeowners to do what they do. The realtors are the ones that are saying, but if we don't have the mortgage interest tax deduction, how are we going to sell homes? Like, the homeowners, they exist. And I think that they're very good at lobbying in this, like, micro neighborhood, Sunset only, Richmond only, you know, Bernal Heights only. But in the end, like, with statewide stuff, I truly believe that it is the realtors that are organizing, paying for, and essentially stopping all of the stuff that we want to do.
Well,
so
wait,
I'm worried about that.
You're worried they're going to out-organize us.
Yeah, no, well, I'm worried about they're going to go to a politician and pay more money to them, not out-organize us.
Well, but there's so much more money on the other side, too. I mean, this is the other thing, is that every major industry that wants to employ people in the state has been sitting and not getting involved. They've been just saying, well, maybe we can just pay our people a little bit more and pretend this isn't happening.
They'll get housing somewhere.
And they're just sort of trying, they're holding their breath and trying to get through it, holding their breath and trying to get through it. And this is where the money on the other side is going to have to outweigh the money on that.
But
side.
Like the industry, so, wait, is, have they done anything?
I got to chip in. Like the answer is no. And so like what Laura is talking about is that there is the capacity for countervailing business forces to swamp the power of the realtors. That is unquestionably true. That is not how the Sacramento is configured today. As one very former lawmaker, now a very well-known lobbyist, put it to me, the tech industry consists of a bunch of skinflint little bitches. They
again, we're exactly, calling people names.
Exactly what he...
Look, we're always getting called names.
I know. Look, that's what he said. That's,
what does skinflint mean?
Yeah, what does skinflint mean? Brian Hanlon on the podcast.
Like, that they're cheap, right? So, like, they complain about housing, but they're not spending the money.
Because housing is the opposite the money of the way that because, tech works.
Well, no, because it's not directly germane to their business interest.
No, I don't think that's why. I think it's because there are too many tech people, CEOs, who fundamentally made their business pretending government doesn't exist. And they want to, they think they can hack things.
Well, there's that, but no. But look, tech is in Sacramento, like, when it deals with industries that are already regulated. So, like, Airbnb is in Sacramento. Uber is in Sacramento.
So you're
tech is in Sacramento.
I think that when I've talked to tech companies about investing in affordable housing, they're always like, well, when do I get my return? When do I get this? And, like, real estate is a 30-year game. Mm-hmm. You know, you... The good real estate investors know that it's going to take that long to, like, smooth out your investment. And that is the polar opposite of the way that the tech industry works. They want to put money in a fund. They want it to make a gazillion dollars within a tiny little amount of time. And they want to take that money and they want to put another fund. And
well, look, it depends. Look, tech is diverse. Like, when we're talking about, like, the tech industry, the tech industry is very diverse. And there are a number of folks in the tech industry who are, like, who are on the board of publicly traded companies that are doing very well, that are like, how are they going to hire 10,000 engineers in the coming 15 years? Where are we going to put them? So, like, it's not the case that, like, no one is thinking along these lines. But I think that, like, Laura is generally correct, is that there's a most folks haven't gotten involved. But again, some have.
Some
so
have.
So I think that could change.
Yeah, but and they it's also, happening. It is. It is happening.
Another thing that they haven't figured out, and this is, like, really cynical, is that politics is actually a lot cheaper than they think it is. The biggest problem is that putting your money on the scale is actually a very cheap endeavor because there's not that much money in local politics already. I mean, this is where...
That's true. Although, like, a state level, like, a competitive state level ballot initiative can be many tens of millions of dollars. So, like, those things can be quite expensive. But
thank you, Prop 13, too.
I want to push back on something that Sam said, though. Where it's like, well, like, the YIMBYs are going to have to confront the realtors. Well, look, the realtors are one among many of organizations that have endorsed our Housing Accountability Act bills. Now, I don't know if they've actually done anything about it other than, like, put their logo on a letter. But, you know, the way politics should work, it shouldn't all be about purity politics. It should be about, right, the YIMBY party may have permanent interest, but we have temporary alliances. And I have no problem allying with anyone if it is going to achieve our short-term goals. That said, yeah, we're going to come out against the realtors on other issues. I had a conversation with the lobbyists for the California Apartment Association just earlier this week.
Great people.
Look, I said, yeah, I support rent control. And yeah, I think we should expand rent control to single-family homes if the home is, you know, if it's, if the owner owns five or more homes, right? Because, like, what you've seen happen, especially in the aftermath of the Great Recession, firms like Blackstone bought up tons of single-family homes in California, including in Oakland, knowing that they are exempt from rent control under Costa Hawkins. But they're, in effect, like a giant landlord. That's a huge loophole, and that needs to change. But look, I was very, very clear that, yeah, I support rent control. I support tenant protections. I support, you know, ending Prop 13. I support reforming or really ending the mortgage interest deduction. And I'm like, oh, okay. But you also support more housing, right? I'm like, yeah, absolutely. So Sacramento is really different than San Francisco style politics. It is hyper petty and personal and ugly here. In Sacramento, it is very, very common for groups that have real ideological differences, including organizations that represent the interests of low-income people, partnering with business interests to advance specific legislation that they feel they have, like, a mutual benefit on. That's fine. That's how politics should work.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, but, like, I haven't seen that on the other side. I mean, I just really, like, the things that they've chosen to do are weirdly not advancing their own interests. Like, I don't understand why the thing that Peter Cohen decided to do was to try to eliminate the effectiveness of the state density bonus.
Well, that does advance his interest, though.
But it doesn't, right?
It does. His personal interests.
No, his personal, like, obsessions. It doesn't advance the interests of affordable housing developers.
Right, but they don't. Like, it's been a long time since Choo Choo's leaders, like, represented actual affordable housing developers. A long time.
But look, we've been to Sacramento.
Wait. Let's take a moment and pause and talk about how crazy that is.
Yeah, agreed. It is crazy. But it exists, and that's why, like, you know, they're politicians, basically, the people who run Choo Choo. And politicians' jobs are to get reelected or get rehired. And that's why they do what they do. I went up to the state, and I fought against market rate development. I don't know what this is, but...
I mean, like, the thing is that if Choo Choo is no longer advancing the interests of affordable housing developers, which is how I see it, then it is time for the affordable housing developers to leave Choo Choo.
I'm going to let Brian comment for me.
Well, you know, look, this has happened at the state level, like, before. You had a split with Housing California, a state-level advocacy organization, where a lot of the developers peeled off because they felt their interests weren't being represented to form their own group. But then they've since kind of not recombined. They're still individual, like, separate groups, but, like, they're kumbaya. It's fine now. But, yeah, like, there's a real tension at the local level, at the state level, between the people who actually build housing that's affordable for low-income people and the people who like to, I don't know, complain about market rate housing, and some of the folks who, you know, are genuine local community activists.
I mean, at the Facebook Live thing, how many times did Cohen look at me and was like, oh, well, Sam would know because he's a developer. Like, he said that to justify, like, a bunch of things, a bunch of points that he made. And I wanted to be like, you are supposed to represent all the developers? Like, can't you know this, my friend?
What I didn't say during that interview was a lot. Yeah. But the other thing that I don't know why I bit my tongue, but what I didn't say was, yeah, and he's on this side of the table.
We just high-fived.
Yeah. There was also a great high-five between me and Tommy on that. Yeah.
He'll deny it to his death.
Ah, he loved it.
He probably did.
All right, so let's wrap up. Tonight, check out the ABC 10 with, it's going to be an amazing
11
piece.
p.m.?
11 p.m., but we will also be, like, tweeting the shit out of it. And there's also going to be, supposedly, all this bonus content. So what I have heard is that Becky O'Malley from Berkeley is going to be... beautiful. She is going to say...
Oh, that's the one who called me an ill-mannered oaf in
you
print.
You are an ill-mannered oaf.
Isn't wrong, so I never asked for a retraction.
We get called so many names.
Yeah, but that was actually kind of fair. Like,
when you are.
Like, a lot of this other stuff was totally unfair.
The thing... Anyway, I could go into it. But you know what, Becky? She's going to, like, just... This is, like, sometimes I just want to hand the mic to our opponents more. Becky's a perfect example. I'm like, Becky, yes, please explain
pour it on, Becky.
More why you're not awful. Yes, please, please. Talk about defending your neighborhood, you rich white lady, please. But that's going to be awesome. And we'll give you more updates on all the Sacramento bills. Make sure you're on the mailing list. Anything else?